Hey, this is James from SurvivalPunk.com.
And this is, as always, his co-host, Mike. How are you doing this week, man?
Pretty good, actually. We'll see how the next couple of days take a toll on me with, tomorrow I start a week-long overnight at work, so there's
that. Overnights, like, yeah. Oh, good God, like third shift anybody else?
Right, so I'm probably going to crack out and stay up all night tonight on Red Bulls and do work on the website.
You should.
And then sleep tomorrow.
Yeah, my advice is just stay up as late as possible and then...
Which has been about 1 o'clock average recently.
You said this is only for this 1 week of overnights, right?
Right, right.
And then so, you're back on normal?
Back on normal.
Oh, Lord.
For now.
It's nice of them to screw with your entire ritual.
Circadian rhythm?
Yeah, whatever.
Anyway.
I heard you did a little hiking this morning.
Yeah, I hadn't seen my buddy Gabe in a while, so... We decided to get up and go do some sort of fairly early morning hiking in Beeman Park, which is my favorite new park. I've gone there with you guys before.
It's just outside of Ashland City.
Correct. Yeah, so we went there. We did some hiking, a little trail running. There's a beautiful creek that runs through it. And I took my shoes off and went barefoot through the creek and tried to build up my mitochondria.
Oh.
Communing with nature.
Little Cody Lundining going on there?
Yeah.
How did you enjoy that?
It was pretty good.
Being barefoot in the creek there.
It was wonderful.
Oh, really?
Yes. You know, because it's like, what, 90 degrees, high 80s today?
Oh, yeah. It's up there.
And the cool creek water on my feet felt good.
Oh, did Gabriel join you in your little tiptoe through the creek?
He did walk through the creek, but he left his shoes on.
Oh, I bet he regretted that later. I don't care.
So, yeah, he just threw his socks away and...
He threw his socks away?
He threw his socks away.
Oh, for the love of God.
Yeah. So I was like, why don't you just take your... He's like, oh, well, I don't care. I mean, I thought about wearing, like, my Vibram Five Fingers so I could walk in the water with them.
Aren't those the ones that have that class action lawsuit against them now?
Yeah.
You never did explain to me what that class action lawsuit was about. I thought these were supposed to be getting you closer to... You know, closer to the natural order of things.
The shoes themselves are good. It's not a class action lawsuit because they're bad or faulty or damaged in any way. It's a class action lawsuit because they made some health claims they couldn't quite back up. Like it magically heals your feet and stuff. And I read an article where a guy switched to minimal shoes and his feet got stronger. He developed an arch. Like his feet actually did improve. But, you know, that.
I thought we weren't supposed to have arches and that was the problem.
Apparently, from what I was reading, that because of all the arch support in shoes, the arches in our feet get weaker, thus making the foot less stable because we have arch support instead of like muscles and strengthened musculature and bone in your feet to do the arch support for itself.
Ah, I see.
So by having a shoe that does not have arch support, your foot has to support itself.
Right. That makes sense.
Right. But apparently making claims such as that is bad.
Whatever.
I don't know. I didn't buy the shoes because I wanted them to magically make my feet better or different. I wanted a minimal shoe that was comfortable.
You wanted everybody to notice your toes.
No, I don't. So, yeah, I did some hiking today. That was fun. And then...
Got some big news coming up on the horizon there?
Got some big news.
You want to share that with us?
Well, not quite. I'm just going to hint and allude that keep your eyes on Survival Punk. There are big things coming down the pipeway.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I have a tendency to try to... I have, like, two switches here. Either I try to, like, run full force and do something quickly and get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, take my time and it maybe takes too long. So, a lot of things, if I think... I would prefer to just jump in and just do things and then figure out along the way and then just throw spaghetti at the wall metaphorically and see what sticks than take too long and plan too hard and not do anything. Like have analysis paralysis where like you're just overthinking things but you're not actually accomplishing anything.
Right.
So with this thing, as soon as I get it built about where I want. I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there and see if it sticks.
Yeah. You don't want to end up like the alternate universe, Mr. Fantastic, trying to find the device amongst all the other devices aboard Galactus' ship to destroy him with, the ultimate nullifier.
Right.
Spends so much time doing that that he devours the world.
Right.
Sorry, just had to whip my geek out a little bit there.
So, yeah, you got anything going on with you?
Well, I'm drawing closer to my company, moving from one city to the next.
Right.
And I'm actually kind of... I've got so much mixed feelings about it. I'm looking forward to the change because I used to be a guy whose life changed constantly.
Right.
And I don't get me wrong. I love my life. I love my wife. I love my house. I love my kids. Not in that order. The kids come before the house.
And the wife.
Right. I even love my co-host a little bit.
Yeah.
But I do get bored. I mean, my life's kind of rut-tastic right now, so this, you know, the change will be good. But it screws with my driving time. It screws with my driving distance.
Right.
But on the upside, there'll be a lot more benefits once I get there. Plus, I get a much bigger working station. I'm nice. Happy about that. And I'm also drawing closer to my vacation. I'm going to be taking a few days and going and seeing an old buddy of mine.
Nice.
Who,
Why we're busy banking episodes of Survival Punk.
Right. But you know what? Let's just get right into the heart of things. Today up on the show, we're going to be talking about what bit the Bitcoins actually come from, apparently. How to blend in. We're going to do a piece on a person I've already invited onto the show once, one Mr. Mick Dodge, and a few things about him I didn't know. We're going to be our Gadget Punk segment of the week this week is going to be about the Fire Piston. We're going to be talking about a contest and three reasons people are obsessed with CrossFit over Nutrition Punk this week. So why don't we just jump right into the heart of it and let's share a few words from our oldest sponsor, JM Bullion.
All right, JM Bullion is the best place online to get all your gold and silver coin needs. They have the best pricing. They have free shipping. And they're just a great sort of family-run company. Good people.
Yeah, and in an economy that you can't trust, it's always a good idea to invest in precious metals.
I absolutely would never go back to not having an investment in, like, silver. Silver is my preferable. I have a little bit of gold, but it's kind of too high for me.
But if you're wanting to invest in silver, gold, platinum, or whatever you want, JM Bullion now has free shipping. And all you got to do is go to survivalpunk.com, find their banner on the right-hand side, click it, and start making wise investment choices today. All right, let's just move right on into the news.
Awesome.
We got a headline here that's had me wondering why this is on this particular show. Our first news story is apparently about something called Titcoins. Would you like to elaborate on that, sir?
All right. So, Titcoin is a brand new cryptocurrency for porn purchases. With over...
What?
Diff Fark.
Is that an editing? What is this? There's a bar that's going through the article. We can't read some of the words. They got to us, man. The black hats got to us.
Ralph doesn't like Titcoins. All right, try again.
Okay, time for our first news story of the week. It's about something called Titcoins. You want to elaborate on that a little bit and why we're talking about it here?
All right. So I got sent an article by my friend Gabriel on Facebook, and here it is. Titcoin is a brand new cryptocurrency for porn purchases. With over 275 cryptocurrencies currently trading on the market and new ones popping up seemingly every week, it can be hard to keep track of which ones are scams and which ones are simply doomed to fail. By now, you must be acquainted with some of the mainstream coins, such as Bitcoin, Litecoin, and one of our personal favorites, Dogecoin. But the cryptocurrency world is about to get a proverbial boob job thanks to the arrival of Titcoin, the first porn industry-targeted cryptocurrency. Hailing from the minds and of startup finance wizards Edward Mansfield, Richard Allen, and a third gentleman who prefers to remain anonymous, Titcoin is designed to easily facilitate payment of your daily jerk-off sessions.
On June 21st, people who sign up early for a Titcoin wallet will get first dibs at mining what will eventually be 69 million Titcoins. Why not have fun with this? 3 hours before the official launch at noon that day, evidently, the incentives to get in on the Titcoin were already very real. So I called up one of the co-founders, Mansfield, to talk about why Titcoins are the tits and their fake viral video that jokingly advertised Titcoin as a barter system based on flashing.
And this article is from Vice.com, puts out good content. So, Vice, the first time I'd heard of Titcoin was the fake spec ad that was made for a contest to become Pornhub's creative director. The video made it seem as if Titcoin was a way for girls to pay for things by flashing their tits. That's not exactly how your currency works, but would it ever be possible for me to use Titcoin in that way in the near future? Edward Mansfield responds, anything is possible. It's funny because it's tongue-in-cheek and meant not to be reality at the same time. I don't think we would advocate flashing your tits. That market already exists to some level. This is an interview, and I'm not going to sit here and read this whole interview.
Well, you know, that's our first news story for the week. Now, are we going to start accepting Titcoins as tips on our site?
It's wow, that's pretty long.
That's what she said.
I don't know how the how this currency is going to play out, because like they said, there are new cryptocurrencies popping up all the time, constantly.
Cryptocurrency.
I did think it was kind of funny they decided to cap it out at 69 million Titcoins. Because one of the features of the cryptocurrencies is they have a finite amount of coins that you can mine.
Really?
So they're hidden out there on the internet, and you have to use computers to go search for and process transactions and mine for the coins.
They're hiding 69 million imaginary coins on the internet?
Yes, through transactions and stuff.
That's... Because,
for bitcoins, you have to have, like, you have to mine equipment, just like you would with, like, gold and silver. You mine for them. And then just like, and this is what I was talking to Gabriel earlier when we were hiking, that it's a good thing that currency is limited, and it's a natural thing that bitcoins have a finite number that you could ever possibly mine.
See, and I never thought about them having a finite number.
Right. Well,
because they're digital.
They are digital, but it was created, and they haven't all been mined yet. There are still lots of bitcoins out there yet to be mined.
And what's to stop people from actually making fake ones?
It's because it's cryptocurrency. You can't fake one because it'll identify itself as being fake.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all encoded, and you run the check on it to see if it was one of the ones that was mined through the database.
Interesting.
Right. So, I think it is good that there's a limited amount. I mean, the Earth only has a limited amount of gold and silver. It hasn't already been mined all yet.
Right, that is true. There's still more precious metals up there.
Yeah, and we just fractionalize it to make it a smaller amount. So, like, obviously, if someone sent me an entire Bitcoin, you can tip me on the website, I'd be really thankful because one Bitcoin is about $600.
Really?
Yes. Most of the time, you tip people in fractionals of, like, I think it's called a Satoshi, which is, like, I don't know, the fourth decimal point, which equals, like, a dollar. 0.00001 mm-hmm. is, like, a buck.
Interesting.
So there's that. Right now, we're fractionalizing it, and we don't have all the bitcoins. Once we do all the bitcoins, the price will probably stable out.
Right,
and then it'll just be fractionalized then, so... I don't know if Survival Punk is going to start accepting Titcoin, or if I'm positive I will not be buying any Titcoin. But I just
thought
it was...
You can tip us in Titcoins. I don't care.
I think it says something for cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin that is now starting to become so popular, so spread out there that the porn industry, who's usually pretty early on adapting new technologies, is starting to jump on it.
Huh.
So that's the real reason why I want to read this article, that Bitcoin is starting to get so mainstream. I mean, once the porn industry starts taking Bitcoins, basically, I think it's just going to spread everywhere.
Well, you know, the porn industry has dictated a lot of things throughout the course of history, you know, whether or not VHS beats Betamax, whether or not HD, DVD, Vita, Blu-ray.
Right.
Which they didn't.
I like HD, DVD.
Yeah, well, nobody else did. Neither did the porn industry, which is why I have a Blu-ray player. All right, our next news story. Seeing how Bitcoins and are so good at blending in, that's what our next news story is about.
Right.
How to blend in.
I saw this article on the How to Survive It website, and my friend Jeremy, his website, but it's How to Blend In and How It Can Save Your Ass. I'm a big fan of the gray man theory, so let's hop right in and start reading this bad boy. Unless you're competing on American Idol, and I pray that you aren't, blending in the crowd is nearly always better than the option of standing out. The guy who blends in is less likely to be targeted in a psychopath on a killing spree, a meth addict looking for someone to rob, or even the annoying MLM guy. Oh, I hate those guys. MLM rep who seem to run around in the coffee shop. By not making yourself an immediate target, you buy precious time to escape a bad situation. But blending doesn't mean hiding in the back of the room tucked into a corner. To blend in effectively, you need to be aware of your environment and the people in it. Do your best to mimic them. For example, while you might blend in quite well in a suit and tie in the office building, you stand out in the same clothing on a football field. You want to ensure your clothing activity and mannerisms help you virtually disappear rather than draw attention to yourself.
Clothing. Dress appropriately based on your environment, activity, and people around you. A common mistake I see here in Florida is when folks wear a vest or jacket to conceal a handgun.
Ugh.
Unless you're fly fishing, a vest is an obvious signal that you're carrying a handgun, and except for a very short part of the year, a jacket is unnecessary, and through the rest of the year, it's uncomfortable.
I occasionally see those people that think it is a good idea to wear a tactical concealment vest. And I always think that guy has a gun. They just stick out like a sore thumb. Like, I'll look through the crowd and I'll pick out that guy and be like, yeah, you're wearing the. I don't like the concealment vest. Maybe for IDPA matches or whatnot, but for daily life, no, don't ever wear it.
Body language. You should carry yourself with confidence, but don't be overly outgoing or introverted, because this will draw unwanted attention. If someone speaks to you, by all means, be polite and respond appropriately. Ignoring people who try to communicate with you will make you appear suspicious, which is counterproductive to blending in.
Yeah.
Confidence also makes you a less appealing target to criminals looking for an easy target. Now, positioning. Where you sit or stand in any environment has a huge impact on whether you blend in or stand out. For example, people sitting in a corner of a coffee shop might stand out a bit more because they are off on their own, while people sitting around others usually blend in a little more. The same applies to people standing on the outer edges of a crowd. I usually strike a balance between blending in and maintaining situational awareness by sitting close enough to others to appear somewhat homogeneous with the crowd while still close to a quick and easy exit. Movement. This is the simplest one. Avoid the edges and move with the crowd. If you want to see this in action, turn on Nat Geo and watch lions hunt gazelles. They always snatch the animals from the edge of the herd. Or the Thomas Crown Affair.
No, don't click that.
Oops.
Well, hey, you just helped Jeremy like by clicking on his Google ad and making him like 5 cents. So, there you go.
Was that the whole article then?
That was the whole article.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realize.
Alrighty then. Moving right along to our main topic this time. You wanted to share a little bit of information you've learned about a man that I invited to the show, Mr. Mick Dodge.
And I may actually try very hard to get Mick Dodge on the episode. Since you do all that work every episode inviting people, I think I might go out there and try to like get some of these people in on the shows.
Well, that would be greatly appreciated.
That would be, yeah. I mean, you're throwing those out there, so I think I'm going to work behind the scenes and try, hopefully soon, to get us a guest star.
Oh, that would be great.
So yeah, at the end of last episode, we were talking about Mick Dodge, because I had read a couple articles about him before. And I thought the man just sounded neat. And I guess the articles I read were probably along the lines of, like, publicity articles about him for the Nat Geo show, Which I think I do remember reading in the article that I read that he would be filming for a TV show. So before he was doing the TV show. And you apparently have watched the TV show and know about it.
I liked it.
Right. So when we were talking about that last time and I realized that he has a show out, I went home and I started watching the show. I want to say I am 5 or 6 episodes in.
Mm-hmm.
You know this. I'm not the easiest person about watching TV shows.
No, it's hard to get you to watch.
It's hard to get me to watch a TV show. I hate most everything. Even shows that I should like The Walking Dead, for example. I hate. It's mostly because I read the comic book, so there's discrepancies, and I just can't. My mind just.
You gotta
can't
forget one to appreciate the other.
Yeah, and I can't. So, and it was just so boring and gray and drab and just Well, anyway, so I actually got hooked on this show. First episode, super easy. Like, just mixed character. Oh, I just thought he was so
entertaining. Now, was this the preview episode or the episode where he carried his father's ashes?
His father's ashes. Okay. I didn't know there was an episode zero.
It was like
basically.
Basically, there was an episode zero.
Okay. So, yeah, the premise of the show is the way they started the episode 25 years ago. Mick Dodge turned his back on society, walked out into the Ho rainforest in the Washington Peninsula, and hasn't looked back since.
Right.
That he has been living completely off-grid, off the land, with the in harmony with nature for the past 25 years, with, meeting friends and stuff that live out there with him in the Ho rainforest. And
that's what sold me on watching the show.
The bartering aspect of it?
The whole thing about him walking out on society for 25 years, living in the woods, the bartering system, basically how goofy he is and how he screws with the camera crews.
Yeah. So that was obviously, being a fan of survivalism, the survival community, turning your back on society and living off the land in the in a rainforest really appealed to me.
Right.
Like, it kind of made me think back to, I guess I was destined to be a hippie when I was a little kid, because I had, like, weird daydreams when I was, like, 5 or 7 about moving down to the South American rainforest and fighting poachers. I wanted to grow up and be, like, basically in Greenpeace or something. Like, I wanted to, like, live in the trees with a bow and arrow and fight logging companies.
Oh, my God.
You know, every little kid has a weird dream, and that was mine. I wanted to be Tarzan, basically.
That's awesome.
I'll say I kind of grew out of that, but I've kind of come back full circle with...
Apparently you never grew out of it.
Just
buried it down in there.
Yeah. So,
and it's resurfaced. Now that you're damning the man.
Yeah, that kind of sold me on that show. Like, living off-grid, using the resources, being more in touch with the earth.
Seemed like a really great existence.
Yeah, I had trouble finding Mick's age anywhere on the internet, but I would guess he's 50?
I don't know. He's somewhere. It's hard to tell with all the hair.
Right. So, yeah, I just wasn't able to find...
Well, don't worry about it now. Tell us about the stuff that you know.
We'll get to that in a minute. I want to talk about the show. A couple episodes, they show him sleeping in tree stumps, which seems to be his thing.
Right.
Hollowed out tree stumps over the river.
Fallen logs and stuff.
Right. Mostly eating what looks to be, for the most part, a vegetarian diet for the things around it. Not that he's vegetarian. Because he eats plenty of meat.
It shows him foraging a lot.
And part of that foraging is roadkill. If he can find a fresh roadkill, then he'll eat it in a second. That's what I read about in the article, that a lot of his meat, because those busy highways have a lot of roadkill.
I've seen him getting a nice drink of water off of like a tree.
A mushroom.
Off mushrooms, off of the trees. Right. Pine needles and stuff like that.
Yeah, streams and So those are all good things, because all that dew from like plants is completely safe to drink.
And they showed you several uses for a pine cone.
Yeah, I think some of that was like messing with people. Although, because one of the things he did was brush his teeth with a pine cone, Which
would hurt like hell, I'd think.
Well, you would develop strong gums from that, though.
Yeah, after they bled a lot.
Yeah. Thus, probably carrying you of gingivitis. Like, I know...
Scars and calluses.
I know some primitive societies, to clean their teeth, they chew on, like, twigs, like branches, like small branches.
He also said you could clean your ears with... And there's one other use.
That one, I think, was just messing with the camera crew.
Yeah, he's like, there's one other use, but you'd cut it.
Yeah, no. Don't wipe your butt with a pine cone. That's just like the three shells. Don't do it.
Oh, my God.
So there's that. The other thing I liked a lot was the bartering. He's out there. Obviously, he doesn't have a job in the show.
Right.
And he goes out there and he finds natural things. Like, in one episode, he's trying to get his buddy... He's trying to get a new bow because his bow broke.
Yeah, his bow broke. So he goes out there and he finds... He's got this buddy that does a lot of wood carvings and other, like, handcrafted stuff.
Right.
And he takes him to stump that he finds. I mean, it's a very very nice
stump. I can't remember the name of the stump, but sometimes there's, like, abnormalities, like tree tumors, and use them for veneer and stuff. So if you slice it real thin and you hit it with a varnish, like, they look beautiful.
Right. So he took him that, but it wasn't enough to get the bow. It wasn't enough because he was trying... See, that dude didn't even have the bow. He had something like a pair of like handmade leather pants that he was going to trade to the buckskin pants that he was going to trade for the bow.
Right.
But the dude said the stump wasn't enough of a trade for that.
Right.
So he goes out and makes him what he calls jam juice.
Jam juice.
Now keep in mind, it shows Mick Dodge rarely ever wear shoes. He's walking barefoot through the forest.
Right.
And on his way to go to his apprentice's house to get him to help him make the jam juice, a bald guy that lives in the woods.
Will of Stone.
Wait, Will of Stone, and wears a kilt. And it shows him, like, screwing around with elk poop. And it shows him walking through elk poop.
Yeah.
And they go there and they pick all these berries, any kind of wild berry that they can find out in the woods. And they put it in this big bucket, and then it shows them making the jam juice by stepping and squishing it with their bare feet. Their bare, unwashed feet, which he called the secret ingredient in the jam juice.
Right.
And then taking this big jar of jam juice to this dude to trade it with the stump or the... And it shows the guy putting his finger in there and licking his finger and everything. And our producer is over here having a conniption fit because she watched this with me.
First thing I said was, ew!
Ew! It just showed him walking through that deer poop! So he trades him, gets the buckskin pants, goes to the bowmaster where he almost gets hit by an arrow.
Yeah.
And gets a new bow and everything. Actually, doesn't give him one. He helps him make one.
Right. And I like...
So it was a whole bartering system.
I did like that he was messing with the camera crew afterwards and put his blindfold on and was spinning around with a knocked arrow.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
While everyone, like, runs into the trees screaming, I don't want to get shot.
I forgot about that, because they did. You could see the camera scatter.
Yeah.
You could see it.
Yeah, he's got an arrow knocked up and just starts spinning circles wildly, and they're like, oh, crap. They're running. So... I mean, that, I guess, in essence, sums up one of the reasons why I do like the show. I guess my two main reasons was Mick's personality is really infectious and just humorous.
It really is.
I like his reverence for the rainforest that he loves.
Mm-hmm.
You can really tell this man does love the rainforest.
He's got vines and stuff and roots tattooed all over his feet.
Right. So he's just amusing. He makes the show entertaining. Oh my God, one episode, he got Giardia or something from water and just had them runs the whole episode. So the whole episode is him going around, having the runs, trying to, like, fix himself. He's like, you can't be sick out here in the rainforest, it'll eat you. I gotta get myself fixed in a quicken.
I can only imagine there was a few scenes, because I apparently missed this episode, where he just had to pop a squat.
He spent about half the episode behind a bush.
Oh my God.
And the camera crew's like, Mick, are you okay? Can the guy get some peace? See, he goes to all of his friends trying to... Every friend has, like, a cure. They're like, oh, this will cure you right up, Mick. This will cure you up.
Nobody had a bottle of Imodium?
Nobody. He tried some herbs. He sat there and just, like, built a sweat lodge, like, a matter of, like, an hour, like, a couple of hours.
He just a sweat
he took lodges and, like, he took logs and built, like, the walls, like, just stacked them one on top of the other, built a roof. There's, like, he pulled a wood-burning stove out of, like, the junk pile or something, and then he did. He built a sweat lodge and went in there and, like, slept in it overnight sweating.
Trying to sweat this illness out of him.
Trying to sweat out. Eventually, the thing that cured him was him and Will of Stone went to the 30-degree river stream, stripped naked, and went swimming.
That cured him?
That cured him. It just pulled everything up tight in there.
I would not have wanted to have been in that stream with him with the runs.
No.
I sure as hell wouldn't want to have been downstream from him.
So there's that. And then well, I'm not taking away a lot of, like, survival information per se from the show. Like, there's a nugget here and a nugget there of somewhat survival information.
There's tips here and there.
Minor tips here and there. I do like his caching system where he hides items, clothes, necessities, belongings all over the rainforest.
Little caches and bunkers all right. over the place.
I like that idea.
Showed on one episode where somebody had raided one of them.
Right. So I definitely like that. And I think the bigger thing for me is he's entertaining, and I love the views. Like, I love the scenery. Like, the rainforest he's in is just so beautiful.
Now, this is the rainforest, want to be out like, there. Up in Washington State.
Right. I think the only rainforest that exists in the United States is that rainforest in the Washington Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, you have to head down South America across the border.
Pretty much. But you've actually learned some other things about McDodge.
Well,
and about the show.
I did want to spend some time saying how I do like the show.
I like it too. It's amusing.
And I continue to watch it, and I will actually continue to watch it now. But much like all TV, unfortunately, and one of my reasons with TV that I dislike it is Nat Geo has not. They haven't been honest with the premise of the show. The premise that 25 years ago, Mick Dodge turns back in society, walked out to the whole rainforest, and hasn't looked back since then, is not really true. He lives in a cabin, not his home, a home that was provided for him by the company that he works for.
He works for a company.
It's a... I don't want to say... He works for a place called Earth Gym as a personal trainer. The rainforest is actually his gym, where he takes clients and makes them fit. So, of those caches he has hit all across the rainforest, there's a lot of workout equipment in them. Dumbbells, barbells. He'll go through and do pull-ups on tree branches and stuff. So, an Earth Gym, I don't know so much if they actually pay him as much as they just provide him his needs. They'll give him food, they'll give him the cabin that he can stay in. So, there's that.
Still kind of bartering.
Yeah, which, to be honest, I would kind of actually like to see the show if they were honest. Like, the whole concept of the Earth Gym, like, I want to research that and look at it. Because, and he was saying, and I will try to find a quote, because there was an article I read. It's this one, actually. McDonald's part of the update. Mixed paid for show doesn't have a bank account, debit card, check card. going to help them spread the word about Earth Gym, as well as giving the community amazing people as part of it. Earth Gym gets as much love and support as it can. So, he works for Earth Gym. This article's not what I wanted. There's more information. So, yeah, I have gone to their gym website, and they have trainings and gyms sort of spread out most of the United States. There's New Jersey, a couple in California, Arizona, nothing close to us. Otherwise, I would have went and talked to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, he does live there. He does have things at his cabin. Like, he has a phone. He can't talk on the phone. He does own shoes. He prefers... And, you know, when he's going out and training in the rainforest, a lot of times you go barefoot when possible because of the connection you get with the earth from walking barefoot, which I think I read there's 200,000 nerve endings in the feet designed to communicate with the microorganisms and soil that you come in contact with. So, and you know, I think that that connection between, like, I think humans are 80% bacteria, so encouraging that connection between the bacteria in the earth and the bacteria in your body, I think there's something to be said for that, even scientifically, and not so much woo-woo, whatchamacallit. So, and Natural Geographic is somewhat scripting the show. Mick is told what to do, but he still messes with the camera crew, really. He his personality comes through.
So in other words, once something gets deemed reality TV, there's usually very little reality to it.
Right, right. So,
which has always
been
one of my biggest gripes about reality television.
You always take that with a grain of salt when I'm watching a reality TV show. I know the producers are trying to aim for drama, and they're trying to elicit emotions and get viewers, because unfortunately, that's what sells. And I mean, I've talked with you about my concepts for a reality, for a survival TV show, which would be, I think my running concept was bug out bag the show.
Right.
Where I would have people sign up to be on the show, random survivalists all across America, and I would give them a time frame, like something like the month of April, we might need you to be on the show. And at some point, we're going to come knock on your door and say, grab your go bag, let's go.
Right, and this is something that they had to have made themselves.
Right, well, yeah, I mean, unless you want to go buy one of the pre-made bug-out bag kits off the internet,
well,
which
that's,
I also shit. Whatever,
I mean,
whatever
that's
I mean, the premise is, like, you have to, when I knock on your door, you've got to grab your go bag. You've got no extra time. Grab this your bag, let's go right now.
That's what the term bug-out bag means.
Exactly.
Anybody who doesn't know what bugging out means, it's basically a term that came about in several American wars. You have to be ready to leave at a moment's notice,
right,
or bug out.
Right. Which, I mean, I guess we need to plan on having a future episode on the bug out bag, which, to be honest, the bug out bag is what actually drew me into survivalism.
Right.
It was my gateway drug that then went to everything else.
I have a bug out bag.
I provide. Yeah, today Gabriel was harassing me because I told him I was going to make him a bug out bag like I did you. And he keeps harassing me. He's like, when are you gonna make my bug out bag? When you make my bug out bag?
Dude, make your own damn bug out bag.
Well, I gave you one.
Well, I know you gave me one, but at that point I had like next to no interest whatsoever in anything survivors.
Right.
If he's already got an interest, somebody's trying to break in. The black hats are getting to us.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I've got so much spare gear. Like, I got it worked out. I've got this sort of tactical man purse that I'm trying to get rid of.
Give him a Swiss Army knife and a pack of ramen noodles.
Yeah. I did give you a pack of ramen noodles.
You straight up did.
Yeah.
I thought it was like
it was left over from one of my former roommates. So just to wrap up the Mick Dodge stuff, it is reality TV. It is not true. If you watch it thinking that this man literally does live out in the woods for like 25 years, he doesn't.
In a cabin,
in the
maybe,
future,
but not for all that time.
Right. In the future, I'll have to look up an article. There's there is a solitary last tribe member somewhere in South America that has lived completely on his own in the wilderness of like the rainforest with minimal human contact. Like, they had to actually quarantine off, like, I don't know, like a 30-mile, 100-acre, like, plot.
Just for this guy?
Just for this guy. Because, okay, you know what? You know the prime directive in Starfleet is, right?
Right. Don't screw with the evolution of another culture.
Right, because we're so far advanced, we can't make contact with someone that's less than us.
Right.
So, basically, they've determined this guy, for us to contact this guy who's like the last remnant of a primitive society, he has no concept of our time period. He might as well be like a...
Living several hundred years ago.
Thousands. Like, he might as well be a Neanderthal, like a primitive caveman.
Really?
Yeah. So, there have been some, like, they had to quarantine off because they don't want to infect him with our... the prime directive. They had to enforce the prime directive and quarantine off this part of the land because there were some scientists there trying to study him, and he kind of freaked out and killed one with a bow and arrow.
Wow.
And then ran. So, I mean, for people's protection and ours, I kind of wish they would sneak in cameras, though. And like, that's the reality TV I'd watch. I want to see what this guy's doing. Because they're... And I'm going way off on a tangent here. Like, he's nomadic, and he keeps building, like, semi-permanent residences everywhere. And all of them, there's this weird hole in the floor. Like, he digs a hole in the floor of the shelters, and they can't figure out what the hole's for.
Toilet.
He's not using it to burn in or defecate in.
But he keeps building a hole in the floor.
But in every shelter, he digs a hole in the middle of the shelter.
Well, he probably has something that he buries and then digs up and takes with him. Leaves the hole.
They've investigated lots of these sites, and they cannot figure it out why there's a hole made in the middle.
He probably sleeps in there.
It's not... They can't figure it out. So, yeah. I'll have to bring up the article and talk about him on a future episode.
Doesn't seem... Wait a minute. If he's cordoned off from the rest of society, how are they finding these... They're breaking their own rules to go in there and find these semi-permanent structures.
I think... Because they've been studying this guy for, like, a couple years. I think they had to just totally just cordon it off after, you know, he killed a scientist.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't... It's not really his fault. To him, that guy may have been an alien. I mean, really.
That's
this
true.
This guy has no clothing. He's completely naked. So this clothed scientist and a couple of them would have just been like... And probably not even, like, of the same race.
Does he know why? Do they know why he's like the last one?
They think that his tribe died off, and he just happened to live. And it was a tribe that just did not have, like, they're finding remains of the tribe, but it was one that, like, people had never came in contact with.
Hmm.
So he's just been isolated, and now he's the last one. He's the only survivor of a tribe that no longer exists, and he's completely out of time.
How do they know he's still alive?
Whenever I read the article, they knew he was still alive.
Did they tag him?
I don't know. I think they observed him somehow. So I read this a few years ago, so I want to find a follow-up and see if we know anything else, see if he's still alive. Because I think he was like 30 or something. He'd been on his own for probably 20 of those 30 years.
Yeah.
He's been alone for a while. So anyway, Mick Dodge. Not real, but a good show to watch.
Yeah, he's still amusing.
He is still amusing.
And I still want him to come on the show, by the way. So, Mick Dodge, if you're out there, I still want you on here.
He's got a Twitter. Let me see if I can Twitter him.
Okay, the fact that he has a Twitter just breaks my heart.
I'm sure
he was made to have one by Nat Geo.
Whatever, it still breaks my heart. All right, now it's time for our Gadget Punk segment this week.
This will be fun.
Oh, no, it was not. No, it was not.
Is it the first time that you have co-helped me test a survival gear product?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, this is the most effort I've actually put in. So
tell me about this. How did I get this survival gear product?
Well, once upon a time, I was watching a show called Survivor Man featuring Les Stroud, who's one of my survival heroes. I love this show because he's literally out there by himself with the cameras. He is his own camera crew. So it's more real to me than, like, say, Man versus Wild.
Right.
But on one episode, when I think he was somewhere up in Alaska, he had brought with him this device called a fire piston.
Right.
He brought this with him to demonstrate a reusable fire-starting implement that would not run out of fuel, that would not, you know, didn't have, like, a flint or anything to wear out, anything like that. And he used it to start a fire up there. Well, seeing this, and back then, before I got into all this stuff, I knew Survival Punk James over here, you know, was already into this, so I bought him one. I figured this would be something. It was a Christmas present. I figured this might be something he liked. And he did like the concept of it at first. But he never really got a fire started with it until yesterday. And I can't say that it was a very successful fire. I mean, we did get flames.
Right.
So let me just tell you that. We did get flames. They died out because of poor material. We had damp material that we were working with. And we just let it go because it was not a survival situation. It was a testing situation. And let me tell you a few things about the fire piston. One, it is a pain. It took forever to get that going. You have to have some kind of material to go in it. We were using char cloth that came with it, but you can use other things out in the wild, like anything that you know that can hold a spark that's small enough. You basically put it in the end of this rod, and then jam the rod, you then place the rod into, what do you call the thing? The well? I don't know. Into a hollow tube, and then smack the end of it, pound it, and basically air, the friction from the air and everything being compressed in there
is supposed to
ignite your tinder.
Which is exactly the technology used for a diesel to work.
Exactly.
It compresses it, and
it's a piston. Well, first off, my hand is still hurting from doing this, because it took a lot of time smacking this piston.
Right.
I mean, there's a reason that I was helping him with it, because he'd already wore his hand out, and now it was my turn to wear my hand out. And we just kept going back and forth. Eventually, we did get some embers, and right. he did get the flames we going in this tinder bundle.
We're using, I would say, subpar tinder material.
It was slightly damp, because it rains a lot out here. It's the rainy season.
I mean, had we put the ember from the char cloth on Vaseline-soaked cotton balls, probably would have had a fire no problem.
Right.
I was trying to use just primitive gathered materials out there.
Yeah, because the Vaseline-soaked cotton balls don't naturally occur.
Right, but, and I've talked about this before, and I've got a video on it, why you should always carry tinder. And my preferred tinder is Vaseline-soaked cotton balls.
Gasoline-soaked cotton balls. Yeah. That'll ignite.
And I mean, I've talked about the past, I bet one of my homemade coconut oil pads would have worked
probably
perfectly. Yeah. And if you've got optimal tinder, I think it's good. I was able to blow this tinder bundle to fire. I had trouble getting it to stay on fire. It went back out after it was already on fire, which I've not seen happen. Because the wet material,
it got down to the damp portion of it. It was damp on the bottom of your tinder bundle.
I mean, we could have tried again, and I think I could have got it. But it was proof of concept. We got fire.
Right. So it did work, but there's less painful ways to get fire out there.
It was a lot of trouble.
It really was. Like I said, my hand is still throbbing. Did I mention that?
Yeah, I woke up this morning. My palms were a little sore from smacking the piston.
Yeah. I mean, in a pinch, yeah, it'll work.
I mean, it's not like I'm going to say, forget you fire piston and go throw it away.
No.
It is a backup utility. There's several more I would prefer to use before I went to the piston. Preferably, I'd like to go to my cigarette lighter first.
Yeah, that's always the best method. That's like I've said before, carry lighters with you. I mean, whatever you can do to make sure that you're putting more calories into your system than expending, I mean, is great, because we expend some calories trying to get this fire going with the fire piston.
Right.
Not as many as I'm sure Les Stroud did on one of those early episodes trying to make a fire bow. Took him 12 hours, dude.
Yeah, or the time that Dave Canterbury tried to go out in the woods and make a hand drill fire and spent, I want to say, the entire day out there.
He spent a long time, and then Cody Lund... I saw one episode where he was doing that. Then Cody Lundin walked up and made a fire in like 3 minutes.
Right. Cody is kind of a master at it.
Yeah, I've seen one screw him up, too. One that he had to give up. It's because he was using the wrong kind of wood. He didn't have the right kind of wood for it.
Yeah. Well, the time that I went to the Pathfinder gathering with Dave Canterbury, and there was... and the guy's name completely eluded me, but he's a master of the hand drill. He had a class on making the hand drill fire. And I'm very proficient at getting an ember. I'm not so good at taking the ember and blowing it to life into a fire.
That's the important part.
Kind of impatient. But yeah, and I got several embers, and I blew my hand out. Like, I have a picture somewhere on Facebook that, like, I rubbed a blister and then rubbed the blister off, like, worse than my hands are now. And just, like, a chunk of skin, like, the size of a quarter, just ripped off my hand.
Good Lord, man. You do have some calloused hands right now.
Yeah, I should go back now with my CrossFit calloused hands and give the old college try.
You really should.
What do we got next?
All right, well, talking about gear, if you want You want a place to store your gear? Go to survivalgearbags.com.
Yeah, survivalgearbags.com. They've got all the survival gear bags for your gear and the gear to put in your survival gear bags. Great selection, great company, great service. Kelly, little tangent here for a second.
Oh boy.
So, you know, since I started running the blog and the podcast, I've had to contact, you know, people for various things. Email them, call them. And some people are a pleasure to do business with. Kelly's one of those people.
That's good.
Great communication with Kelly. I love communicating with him. Some people are not. Some people, I just want to pull my hair out and tell them to go F off because I didn't want to deal with them again. It's just a pain dealing with some people. Mm-hmm. Which, I've been sending out a bunch of emails recently for something big on the way. And one person, so there's a Jimmy Moore, fellow blogger and podcaster, has a new book coming out called Keto Clarity. And we mentioned it before about the cholesterol clarity when we did the big cholesterol episode. So he put on Twitter. I've been spending more time on Twitter. If you want to talk to me at Survival Punk on Twitter, I'm gonna set you up with like a mic at Survival Punk something.
That's a waste of time.
Yeah, you'll never get it. Anyway, so I was on there and Jimmy was talking about his new book comes out in August. So I pinged him on Twitter and I was like, "Hey, do you need anyone to review the book for you?" And he was like, "Sure, shoot me an email." And I shot him an email. I was like, "Hey, you know, this is James from Survival Punk. I want to review your book." Just hours later, he sent me back a reply with a PDF file of the book to review.
The whole book?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So he sent me out a copy of the book to review, you know, in PDF form. So I was actually reading it, waiting for you guys to get here. But that's just amazing. Like, Jimmy, big time podcaster and blogger, pretty famous guy. I followed his work for a couple years now. You know, just an amazing, great guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, shout out to Jimmy. Go buy his book. It'll be out in August. Review coming soon.
And as far as survival gear bags go, go to survivalpunk.com. Click on the banner on the right-hand side. Take you straight there. Alrighty now, it's time for Nutrition Punk this week. And you got a contest you wanted to bring up.
I do. This will come out Wednesday, which means there's still a couple days left to enter the contest. So, this past Friday, the 19th or whatever. I think it was the 19th.
Yeah, it was the 19th.
Yeah, so I launched a contest on the blog in cooperation with Tropical Traditions Coconut Oil to give away one quart container of coconut oil, virgin coconut oil.
Now, coconut oil, my understanding, it's different from most of the other virgin oils you'll find out there because it's a solid.
It is a solid at room temperature, but it changes to a liquid about 1 degree higher than that.
Kind of like lard?
Kind of, yeah. I don't want to say like 73 degrees, it starts to turn to a liquid.
Hmm.
Or at least it turns to like a mush.
A mush?
It turns to like a sort of a semi-liquid mush. I use it for a lot of stuff. It has a ton of health benefits.
Oh, it does. I mean, it goes on and on.
I keep meaning to try the fad going around the internet called oil pulling, where you use coconut oil and you swish around your mouth, and it's supposed to pull fat soluble toxins out through your gums and your teeth lining.
I want to see some numbers on that.
It's some of the hippie things I've seen going around. So I'm going to try it. I mean, if I start spitting, you know, coconut oil is white. If I start spitting out black toxic gick, then maybe it's pulling something out of there.
Or you maybe didn't. Yeah, well, anyway.
I don't know.
Oh, so tell us about the contest.
So, yeah, contest came out Friday. There's a widget. Everyone's eligible except for you.
Oh, that ain't right.
You're part of the Survival Punk staff. Your wife can enter, though.
She's our producer.
Yeah. She doesn't actually produce anything.
Yeah, I know. She just kind of sits here and watches us podcast.
Right. So yeah, there's a
widget. She's an executive producer.
The only requirement, there's like three things to
break your phone. What are the three things?
It'll click through and make sure you do it on there. It's you've got to subscribe to the Tropical Traditions newsletter. you've got to like Survival Punk on Facebook, and you've got to like Tropical Traditions on Facebook, and then you're entered, and you get points for each thing you enter, and you can enter every single day for more points.
And the winner will be randomly selected amongst all those who enter.
The Raffle Copter application will pick a winner.
More times you enter, the better your chances.
Right, and then I will pass along the I will pass along the information to Tropical Traditions so they can get your sample out there.
Awesome. Awesome. You could be the winner of a gigantic vat of coconut oil.
Not gigantic. Although, I had talked in the past about storing big, like 5-gallon buckets of coconut oil for food preps, because I think I looked at the calories one time. I think 5 gallons of coconut oil, which will run you like $300 or something.
Maybe like 5 billion calories.
It's a ridiculous amount. And you could live off of coconut oil for short periods of time. You won't get any protein, but unlike carbohydrates, which there are no essential carbohydrates, you do need fat to live. And you could live off of fat. The Eskimos, the Inuits, they lived off of like
seal oil and whale blubber and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, whale blubber. Yeah, I mean, like,
that's essentially like eating a fat man.
I think their diet was like 80% fat, 9% protein, and like 1% vegetable matter. Like, because there's just no vegetable matter up there.
And keep in mind, up there, you have to like maintain a 5,000 calorie a day diet just to keep your body weight.
Yeah, yeah, and obviously they're consuming at least that because they're, you know, and you know, they had a little extra padding to keep themselves warm.
Absolutely. All right, now it's time to talk about 3 reasons people are obsessed with CrossFit. Now I know you're obsessed with CrossFit.
Really? Have I told you about CrossFit?
Yeah, a few times.
I feel like
you've mentioned it on this episode so far.
Yeah, I feel like a I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Mormonist? No, Church of Latter-day Saint.
Yeah, that's the
door to door.
Yeah, you mean the dudes with the bicycles and the ties?
Have we told you about the Church of Latter-day Saints?
I think you're confusing Mormons with Jehovah's Witnesses.
Jehovah's Witnesses. Yeah, yeah. Come knock on your door. Have I told you about CrossFit?
Would you like to buy a watchtower from us? A high tower.
Yes. The 3 reasons people are obsessed with CrossFit. And this comes from, Time.
Wait, Time?
Time magazine, apparently.
I don't know if we should do this. This one's respectable.
I know. The Cult Fitness program has primal appeal. If someone in your life does CrossFit, the high-intensity fitness training favored by Marines and first responders, you've ribbed them out loud or in your mind about being part of a cult. This is a natural response to their relentless insistence that CrossFit has changed their life, and that it will change your life too. The first rule of CrossFit, the crypt goes,
talk about CrossFit.
Is always talk about CrossFit. And that's very true. So why are CrossFitters so wrapped up in this movement that has grown from one fringe gym in California industrial park to 10,000 independent boxes? And have CrossFit Games, an international competition with over 200,000 participants. It's not a cult of personality. Although CrossFit founder Greg Glassman can rattle sabers with the best of them, there's not much celebrity glitz and glamour. The facilities where people do CrossFits are bare bones, often converted into auto body workshops and defunct manufacturing specs. There are no mirrors and none of the conventional health club amenities. And unlike bargain cardio machine farms with monthly fees of $20 or less, CrossFit isn't cheap. Those people alternating Olympic weightlifting movements with handstand push-ups and rope climbs are paying $150 to $200 a month to throw themselves into their chosen ordeal.
They do it for 3 reasons. The first and most obvious is the physical result. High-intensity exercise yields results that differ in kind from moderate-intensity efforts, not just in degree. In a peer-reviewed study in which one group exercised at moderate intensity for 45 minutes on a stationary bike, and the other group did high-intensity intervals for 20 minutes and burned the same number of calories, the high-intensity group lost 9 times the fat. Human growth hormone, HGH,
and other compounds cascade into the blood of people who sprint as though a monster is chasing them and lift heavy objects as if an earthquake survivors are trapped underneath. These hormones signal the body to burn fat and build muscle. The grim trudge to nowhere on a cardio machine or miles of brisk walking does not unlock this chemical cascade. The second reason for CrossFitters' passionate adherence is social. The gauntlets are run as a pack of between a half dozen and 20 people. Doing something physically intense and difficult binds a group of people. Military trainers have known this for thousands of years, but CrossFit is the first modern-day phenomenon that allows Joanne from Human Resources to feel something like the fierce kinship of the Marines. The workouts are scaled. Weaker athletes modify the movements or do them with less weight, but everyone gives 100% effort. There is a primal magic in going physically all out with a dozen people. It's not just a sense of accomplishment, the modern clock-punching virtue of exercise. It's victory. The way you feel when your team beats the other team, wrapped up in that sense of victory as in any pack victory, is gratitude that you're getting stronger, that you are part of a pack that can move their own weight quickly and literally carry each other, that together you can leave all the energy out on the floor three or four times a week.
The ritual sacrifice of human energy. What a weird opening. Argues classic scholar David Sansone is the bedrock definition of sport and the genesis of sport. When Paleolithic hunter-gatherers sacrificed animals to their gods, they were also sacrificing the energy it took to hunt those animals. When those hunters became farmers, they continued to sacrifice animals. But because the animals were domesticated, there was no way to sacrifice the energy it would have taken to hunt the animal. This is when athletic rituals, foot races, and field games became part of religious practice. Freed from the constraints of a literal hunt, that ritual sacrifice of human energy could take a thousand forms, from Native American lacrosse to Mesoamerican ball games, tribal competitions in Africa, and the Olympic Games in honor of the ancient Greeks' preeminent god. The winner of the Olympic foot race was given a torch and carried that torch to the top steps to light the burnt offering to Zeus. Rituals persist even though we forget why we form them. Sport, at its root, is sacrifice. This is why it bothers us so much when athletes take performance-enhancing drugs. We don't feel the same way when singers or actors take performance-enhancing substances. But deep down, we know there's something qualitatively different about sports.
Qualitatively.
That is sullied by steroids and EPO. Sacrifice demands purity. Doping destroys the purity of the ritual. As participants in sports declines, and this is displaced by the fitness industry, the infomercial devices, the ellipticals, the gyms, the profit becomes, because members don't show up, intensity is leached out of athletics. Rituals become habit, sport becomes exercise, that what was meaningful, vivid, and shared becomes mindless, boring, socially isolated. This is why most people think of physical exertion as a chore. CrossFit's ritual intensity reverses these polarities. It's tribal. It's intense. It's never the same workout twice. It replaces cosmetic aspirations, six-pack abs, buns of steels, with an emphasis on function. Mastery, progress, work capacity. It replaces the ease and comfort of gym machines with a demand for an all-out effort and an archaic stoicism. In doing so, CrossFit reconstitute the ritual sacrifice of energy that was made sport important to our ancestors. That makes it important this day, though we've forgotten why. In that way, it's more cultic than ever.
Than even the most
pestered coworker can guess.
Now that's something that's part of it you've never actually talked to me about.
I never associated CrossFit with ritualistic sacrifice of animals. But that was an interesting way to phrase it. I kind of like that article. It went off on something that I did not expect when I saw the link that said three reasons people were obsessed with CrossFit. Good article, time.
Mm-hmm. Good article.
Yeah, I definitely do agree with the there is a kinship when you go work out that intensely with a group of people.
Right.
Which is why I like it when there's a group that shows up and not just me.
So you've never told me about the group aspect of the whole thing.
That's... Yeah, classes usually are, well, I guess at my box, classes are somewhere between, like, 3 and 6 people big, usually.
Oh, okay.
So usually, I'd say usually it's about 4 people. I've seen it, I've literally shown up and been the only person to show up at class 4, which, at that point, you might as well call it private training.
Yeah. True that.
Yeah, good stuff.
All right, well, now it is moving right along. It's time for our permaculture minute of the week. And this week it is going to be the 5 of Spades, food preservation.
Nice.
With a little knowledge and some simple tools, food that would otherwise last only days can be made to last months, years, and even decades. The original purpose of cheese was to preserve milk. Grains can last longer by removing the oxygen from the container. A root cellar can extend the shelf life of many foods for several months without refrigeration. Ham properly preserved, when a girl was born, would be served on her wedding day. A few techniques include dehydrating, fermenting, pickling, hot water bath, canning, pressure canning, salt curing, and smoking. And that was our permaculture minute for the day.
Sounds like bacon.
I got to admit, I really... This is, like, one of my favorite
things. Was there anything hidden on that card?
Let me see. I mean, because... I don't know, because earlier today I just noticed that it says 26 names are hidden throughout here in one needle. And I'm not seeing any names
the needle
or needles.
In the haystack. I bet I can find the name.
Well, it's only, there's only names on half of them, and I'm not seeing it. I see. Okay, fine. You can look at it. Now, while my comrade here looks for the name, we're going to move right on and give you today's Wild Edible of the Week. The Wild Edible of the Week this week is the persimmon, which is in Latin, Diospyros virginiana, and other species. Description. These trees have alternate dark green elliptical leaves and with entire margins. The flowers are inconspicuous. The fruit are orange, having a sticky consistency, and have several seeds. The persimmon is a common forest margin tree. It's widespread in Africa, eastern North America, where we live, and the Far East. We actually had a persimmon tree growing on the property until recently. The leaves are a good source of vitamin C. The fruits are edible, raw or baked. To make tea, dry the leaves and soak them in hot water. You can eat the roasted seeds. Caution. Some persons
are... Sally Fallon Morrow.
Thank you for interrupting me. Some persons are unable to digest persimmon pulp. Unripe persimmons are highly astringent and inedible. Now, what did you find on this card?
The lady's name, Sally Fallon Morrow.
Where'd you find that? Are you kidding me? It's on the line.
It is.
It is.
It doesn't have one, James. You're wrong.
I didn't think you'd write them that dang small.
Oh, yeah. The other one was tiny. The one on the,
It's on the clothesline thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, Paul Wheaton and whatever friends he has that made these cards, they're a little bit devious as it frickin' turns out.
Yes.
No, but I got to give him props for that. All right, and that was our Wild Edible of the Week and our Permaculture Minute. So moving right along, I got a card in here. Did I already do that one? No, I have not done that one yet, so. All right, moving right along. Give me this. Okay, moving right along, it is time for my favorite segment of the show, everybody's favorite game that's sweeping the nation, Mike's Worst Cases.
Woo!
Where we test... our very own survival punk, James's knowledge on how you'd handle yourself in certain scenarios with 11-year-old knowledge. Are you ready for this week's episode?
I am very ready.
All right, then. Oops. Dropped the card. All right, then. Why don't we just hop right into this? Okay. Your first question. How to start a chainsaw? Do you A, hold the chainsaw out and away with one hand while cranking it with the other? B, hold the chainsaw down with a hand and foot while cranking it to start. Or C, leave the chainsaw on the ground and braced behind a rock as you crank it to start.
Read B again. I was...
Hold the chainsaw down with a hand and foot while cranking it to start.
What was A?
A was hold the chainsaw out and away with one hand while cranking it with the other.
I'm going to go with B. B sounds the safest.
Ding, 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 ding. Correct. So you're one... So you've got one so far. Next question. How to survive a forest fire while in a vehicle? A. Stay in the vehicle until the fire burns past you. B. Leave the vehicle immediately if the tank contains any gas. Or C. Drive toward the fire to reach the safety of burnout ground.
C.
Stay in the vehicle until the fire burns past you. You're 1-1 right there. Okay, next. How to recognize trichinosis? A. Within 2 weeks of ingesting infected meat, symptoms include high fever, muscle aches, swelling around the eyes, and joint pain. B. Within 48 hours of infected meat, ingesting infected meat, symptoms include sore throat, headache, delirium, and frequent nosebleeds. Or C. Within a few hours of ingesting infected meat, symptoms include swelling of the feet, ringing in the ears, and flushed skin.
Read A again.
Within 2 weeks of ingesting infected meat, symptoms include high fever, muscle aches, swelling around the eyes, and joint pain.
I'm going to go with A.
Ding, 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 ding. Correct. So that's two of the three I've read you so far. You only need one more to win our fabulous prize.
Yeah.
How to sense you are about to be struck by lightning?
Oh, I hate this question.
A. Your ears ring and your mouth becomes dry. B. Your skin tingles and your hair feels like it's standing on end. Or C, your toes curl and your nostrils flare.
B.
Ding, 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 ding. Correct. You have won our fabulous prize this week, which means that I will not kiss you on the lips after the show is done.
Gotcha. Good.
Alrighty then. Moving right the frick along real quick. If you would like to advertise or sell your stuff on our show, it's real easy. Just contact James at survivalpunk.com. He will give you all the details. We have several different packages worked out. You can pay us with cash. But you get discounts for paying us with either precious metals, bitcoins, or we even have a bartering system worked out. So just contact James at survivalpunk.com. All right, and moving right along here, it is time for Mike's Celebrity Invite of the Week. And this week, I'm actually, you know what? I was just talking about Paul Wheaton and the permaculture cards.
Yeah.
I would like for, you know what, I had somebody else lined up, but screw them. They can be on some other time. This week I would like to invite Paul Wheaton, the man who made these cards, that frankly is like, that's all I know about him is that he made these cards.
Right.
I hear he's called the Duke of Permaculture. I'd like to invite him to, you, Paul Wheaton, if you're listening, which I hope you are, you have an open-ended, open door invite to come on Survival Punk Podcast at any point in the future. And James,
that's a big one.
I know, I'm gonna need you to get on that. Because this one, I mean, I don't know. I want him on here. And we might actually end up with Mick Dodge before we end up with him.
Yeah, I mean he does have the biggest empire in permaculture. I mean, I think there's like 1.9 million people go to permies.com every month.
Good God, I didn't know it was that big.
Yeah.
What's permies.com?
Permies is the forum that he runs as part of his empire.
Oh.
So yeah, you know, maybe one day when we're big, we'll get Paul Wheaton.
All right, well, I think that'll just about do it for us awesome. This week. That was a pretty good show.
Another good one.
Yeah, another good one. We have some good ones every now and then. All right, well, for Survival Punk Podcast, I'm Mike.
And I'm James.
And as I've said before, bring a lighter. Don't kill your hands on a fire piston.